Now, the reading from Isaiah. Nevertheless, there would be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning and will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is given, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this.
And what I find hard about Christmas is the constant Santa-esque jolliness that is required of me every day in December. Everything is merry this and happy that. I just feel, I'm quite a jolly person naturally, and I feel a burden in December to be that every single day. You know, I hear Santa saying, ho, 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 and I'm just thinking, no, no, no. On the 25th, my three kids will open their presents. And I'm just sat there thinking, I've got to recycle that paper. I've got to find batteries that will fit, the tiniest little screwdriver to undo the little battery cap. I've got to find super glue for when he drops it in about 30 seconds' time, and I need to fix it. And then half these presents, I've got to hide them somewhere really well so we can re-gift them to someone else next year. It wasn't always this way, of course. I was your classic child, super excited. Everything was very exciting on Christmas Day. But when the political climate and the actual climate are so dreary, I find it really hard to be happy. Instead of Santa, you know, the character I'd much rather be in charge of Christmas is the seven dwarves, because at least one of those is called Grumpy, and I could join in with him. We need a lift at this time of year. I guess that's why there's always been some sort of winter festival in this country. We need a lift at this time of year. Even Santa does. That's why we leave the cookies and the milk out. We need a lift this time of year. But it can't just be the weather. We spent 6 years in the Southern Hemisphere. It's the same there as well. We need a lift. And it's in the language we use. We talk of having a glass of something as a little pick-me-up. We'll watch trash TV this Christmas for some downtime. Why do we need downtime? Because we need a lift. And even the language of the guilt of the excesses of Christmas, that guilt that we try and fix with something like dry January. And, you know, when I was a kid, I used to go on diets. Now there's no diets, it's cleanses. That's what it's all about. I've got to go on a cleanse. I'm going to go on a cleanse. I'm going to cleanse myself. Greed. Guilt, cleansing. It's interesting, for a secular society, we're using very religious words, experiences of Christmas. Unraveling, perhaps, that we feel there's a deeper need that we have, that there's a lift we need that's deeper than just winter. A deeper hole that we have dug for ourselves that we need rescuing from. And it's worth considering we're not the only ones. That reading from Isaiah that's in our booklets there, written 2,500 years ago It's not one of the two pages that Russell talked about. It's way earlier than those two. It's one of those pages that's pointing towards the great event of Jesus. They were looking for a lift as well. It starts in verse 1. It's just the first little paragraph, sentence number 1. It says there'll be no more gloom for those in distress. So they're getting a lift. And what's the lift? Well, all on that first page, by the little number 2, it talks that there's a light dawning in the darkness. In verse 3, there's a lift for those in hunger. It's like harvest time. In verse 4, for those under a yoke, under a burden, it will be shattered. There's a lift. In verse 5, a lift we'd all love. The armor used for battle is going to be thrown into the fireplace. So we need to ask, they're promised a great lift. Why? Why do they need one? Well, it can't be the weather. This was written to ancient Israel. It's by the Mediterranean. They're not worried about the weather. You know, In the Bleak Midwinter wasn't a Jewish carol. It's a British one. Did they need a lift because of political problems? Well, yeah, actually. There were 12 tribes of Israel, and 10 of them have got ripped off in the north by the superpower of the time, Assyria. And so they were in real political trouble. And so God promises them a political lift. So is that what this is promising us? A political lift? That Brexit's going to be awesome? And is that what Isaiah 9 is telling us? Well, no, in the Old Testament, the political world and the spiritual world were always linked. That's because the Jewish people, they were God's nation to the world, but they were also God's child, his son. So how they acted spiritually as God's child was then seen in how things went politically as a nation. So the fact that things aren't going well horizontally for them as a country shows that things aren't going well spiritually, vertically for them as a people. So when Jesus is born in the king's town, you know, once in royal David city, when he's born in Bethlehem, it looks initially like this is going to be a political lift that's being offered here for the world. But when he dies on a cross 33 years later, we see it wasn't political. No, this isn't a lift for Parliament, but for people. This isn't a lift for your MP, but for ME, for me. Christmas means not just hope for the world, despite its mess, but hope for you and me, despite our mess. And it's possible that we need a lift, that we're in the same hole that these Israelites were in, the same hole they'd fallen into. It's the hole of pride. They'd fallen into the trap of being the boss, of being in control. The same pride we experience in our hearts that means we make and then break our own rules. It's the pride of, at the checkout, here's the pride. It's the pride at the checkout of having your eco bag and seeing someone else having to pay 10p to get their little plastic. That little hint of pride. The pride that comes that seeps out in our Christmas newsletter or Instagram stories. It's the pride that means when we see someone else's, we're not filled with joy, but jealousy. We're in a hole filled with mirrors, where every success echoes into arrogance and every failure resonates into despair. And we need to be lifted out of this hole because it's dark. It's dark in the hole because it's dark in here. These Israelites, to whom Isaiah is writing, like us, were proud enough even to say, God, you want to be my father, but I don't want to be your child. I'll be fine on my own. So we need a lift. And this one promises a lift of the burden of the need to prove ourselves all the time. Lifting of the darkness that comes from ignoring God as the light. Lifting of a warring heart that makes us enemies with God by finding peace with God. Lifting of a spiritual hunger, the sort of hunger that talks about cleansing and dry January to get rid of guilt, but ultimately they never fulfill. We're in a hole, and we can't get ourselves out. We need a lift. And for that, we'll need a gift.
What I find hard about Christmas is gifts. I don't know what to get you. I don't know what to get for myself. I'm of age. I just buy things when I want them. I've ended up just doing that thing. Whatever's running out in the house, I just buy the next one of those. Toilet cleaner, toilet roll, whatever it may be, and just buy the next one. And that feels productive. It's going to get used in a month's time. I say, oh, you're using that gift I got you. Isn't that great? I do sympathize with the comedian not knowing what to get his wife. He said, I took her to an orchard in Devon, a lovely cider farm, and making some beautiful apple cider, and it was there. It was a lovely October day. It was sunset. It was lovely for about half an hour. They just stood in this orchard looking around, enjoying the vista, having a great time. And after half an hour, he said, so? And she goes, it wasn't quite the Apple Watch I was talking about. I find gifts hard. I don't know what to get you. And even the word gift is very misleading to me. You know, stuff from Santa, that's not a gift. If you only get it when you've been good, that's not a gift. You've earned that. That's a wage. That's not a gift. And I'm beginning to sense on our family, the group WhatsApps, and we ping across Secret Santas who's getting for what, so we don't have too much stuff to buy. I'm beginning to sense these aren't gifts we're really doing. It's some sentimentalized version of family, some expectations, some commercialized push towards stuff. And as I go around thinking gift, I'm in the danger of thinking, you know, I have to get them something. I have to get. You know, when God thinks gift, He's thinking, I want to give. I want to give them something. Not I have to get them, but I want to give them something. And so the promises made here of a lift, they come in the form of a gift. But it's not something, it's someone. Verse 6, over the page, have a look. Verse 6, the little number 6. See if you can spot the gift. For to us, a child is born. To us, a son is given. It's given. It's a gift. This was made 700 years before Jesus and comes true at the time of that first Christmas, naught AD, naught BC. Now, that timing seems a little off. You may say, well, why didn't it happen quicker? Well, Asian philosophy in faith will say, look, it's about us making a journey to God, and that can happen whenever we want. We can decide to do that. But Middle Eastern and now Western faith and philosophy says, God's on a journey towards me. Now, that happens on His time frame, therefore, because it's His gift. He decides when He gives it. That's why there's 700 years. It's His gift, because it's His son. God says, I want to give them something. In fact, what they need is someone. To us, the son is given, and the government will be on His shoulders. The government on His shoulders. See, for too long, there's been a yoke on our shoulders, the burden of expectation we've been thinking about, but that can be lifted because the government is on His shoulders now. The ruling the world is His job now. And this gift, He will counsel and console us well. Because He's like us. He's one of us. He's a wonderful counselor, it says. And He can help. He really knows what we're like. Because He's a human like us. But he can really help because he's not what really like us. He's verse 6. He's mighty God, everlasting Father. This God on earth in the manger fundamentally changes our primary father figure relationship in our lives to one that is perfect with God as our Father. And if that's the case, he'll bring peace, which is why he's called the Prince of Peace. If we make peace with God, we can begin to go out and make peace with each other. And the world will become a better place the more people that do that. He rules with justice after all, it says. Now, if he's really Almighty God, Everlasting Father, that means the nativity plays, of which I've seen several already this year, they seem to focus on where Jesus is born, but the marvel here is that Jesus is born. He is God. He shouldn't be born at all. See, Christmas, it's not just about a birth. It's about, it's a coming. It's an arrival. He's the gift. And he's God. Now, everything in the Hebrew world of the first century militated against having God as human. Jews weren't even allowed to pronounce God's name, Yahweh. They wouldn't write it down. They wouldn't spell it. They wouldn't do it. Yet Jesus Christ, by his life, by his claims, by his resurrection, convinced his closest friends and followers who would have Isaiah 9 in their minds that he wasn't just a prophet come to tell them about God, but that he was God himself come to find them. Legend has it that the reason we have Christmas trees in our homes is a German monk, a guy called Martin Luther. And he understood the wonder of Christmas. This is what he preached in 1527, 500 years ago. He preached like this. This is what he said. If you would have joy, if you would have joy, bend yourself down to this place. I will stay with that boy as he sucks and is washed and dies. There's no joy but in this boy. Take him away and you face the majesty which terrifies. I know of no God but this one in the manger. Martin Luther understood the gift. And what I think he's saying is that without Jesus providing an internal, eternal, spiritual lift that connects us to God as Father, as his child, then we'll stay in a hole. And that dark hole full of mirrors gets deeper and darker as time goes on. And the boy in the manger grows up to describe the outer darkness as lasting for an eternity, our own pride echoing back in the mirrors of our mind with no light. And that boy, Jesus, grows up to say that's an eternal hellish existence. Which means our response to Jesus means more than perhaps we thought, if he really is this God. See, if the baby in the manger is, as C.S. Lewis described, just a Robin Hood-type figure of legend and myth, then sure, we ignore him. An eternal darkness seems disproportional. But if Jesus is the gift, if Jesus is God, the gift, the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, the only one to lift us out of the hole, then things are entirely in proportion. How we respond to him really matters. If Christmas is just a legend, in a sense, you're on your own in the world, in life and in death. But if Christmas is true, you're not on your own. You are owned, loved, in the light, lifted out of the pit. That's the gift. And because the government is on his shoulders, so the burden is no longer on mine. But for that to happen, we need to have a shift. What I find hard about Christmas is receiving gifts. I have a terrible present face. You could give me a Caribbean island, and I would still have a look of, oh, thanks, that's great, that's really good, thank you. It's just what I always wanted. I have a terrible present face. Whatever you give me, I look disappointed, and you can see it right in my eyes. Partly it's being a grown-up. You know, kids open their presents, and they say, oh, it's exactly what I've always wanted. Whereas, as a dad now, I open a present and say, this is exactly what I bought on Amazon 4 days ago and wrapped myself for you to pretend to give to me. Oh, thanks, this is what I've always wanted. I clicked it myself. It was my credit card. I entered the little CVC number. So how do we recapture some of that childlike gift receiving so we can receive gifts well? I studied psychology at the university here. And psychology, you know, people think it's they teach you how to read minds and stuff. They do. It's awesome. But we're not normally allowed to tell people about that. But if you tell anyone, I'll read your mind and tell you what you're thinking. And one of the guys you study in psychology is Carl, I pronounce it Carl Jung, but I'm sure it's the J is silent and there's all sorts of German bits going on. Carl Jung, he's the founder of kind of psychoanalysis, sitting down, working out what you're thinking and how to fix it. And he once related a conversation between two rabbis. Now, I used to think a rabbi, it's not the plural of rabbit. It's a name for a Jewish teacher. There's a conversation between two rabbis that he overheard that he told about. He said the first rabbi asked why God no longer seems to show up. You know, he thundered at Mount Sinai. He's shown up throughout history. Why doesn't he show up anymore? The second rabbi answered, there's no longer anyone who can bow low enough. If pride is the problem, if the hole we've gotten ourselves into is pride, then humility, or what the rabbi called bowing low enough, it has to be part of the answer. That's certainly the act of the wise men. These are wise guys. These are wise men, kings possibly. What did they do when they found out about Jesus? They would have left thrones, crowns, riches. Everyone loved them. Their identity as wise men. And they left. They left it all. And they came. And they said, this guy's worth leaving everything for. And I'll come and I'll bow low enough before a new king, the new wise man. If the only lift is a gift, then there has to be a shift. That is the Christian faith. Is not a negotiation. It is a surrender. Our greatest motive for surrendering to King Jesus cannot be what he will do for me. It must be our love for him and what he's done for us. In coming, in living, in dying, in rising, in reigning, and in returning. There must be a shift, though, and it must be a shift that drops all of our conditions. That is, we don't say, look, I'll obey King Jesus, this gift, I'll obey him if. That's not obedience. That's saying to King Jesus in the manger, who heads to the cross, you're my advisor, but you're not my Lord. No, we must shift off the throne so that we can realize he's truly on it. And then God works the strange miracle of making us both more like Jesus and more like ourselves. Because when we rise out of the dark hole of our pride to embrace the light, and it's hard coming from darkness to light, the mirrors we were once surrounded by turn into windows to see others. That's what Jesus calls us to this Christmas. Nothing less. a shift off of the throne, and Jesus then rightly seen as king on it. It's there in verse 7, the last paragraph of our reading. He will reign on David's throne, an everlasting throne, that is. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. He's the king. There's only one throne. And his kingdom is better and bigger. We may be sat there saying, you know what, I'm doing a pretty great job of being king of my own life. Brilliant. But how long is it going to last? Because here's a king who rules forever. There's only one king, and it's not us. Now, we might consider that sounds really exclusive. That what we're saying is that there's Jesus, and you've got to believe in him, and that gift will give us the lift, but we need to shift. Now, that's the only way to get out of the pit of our pride, of our sin, of the fact we're not great friends with God. And the only way to do it is to believe in Jesus. That sounds really exclusive. And inclusivity is a big thing. In fact, it's kind of in the Bible. And that sounds really exclusive. So how do you put those two together? Well, let's just compare it with all the alternatives. Actually, of all the exclusive alternatives, trusting Jesus is the most inclusive of all the exclusive alternatives. Because anyone can do it. You know, to be a 21st century modern inclusive person, it's a pretty small group of the world that can do that, because most people around the world haven't had the kind of societal changes that are going on here. So it's actually not that inclusive a group, because most of the world wouldn't agree with it. But everyone can know that Jesus is king and trust him. It's so inclusive. However old you are, whatever culture you're from, whatever upbringing you've had, whatever version of history you've had so far, this new version of history can be true, is true. And that's available to anyone, everyone. It's so inclusive. Of all the exclusive clubs, of which there are so many, and of which many of us are part of without knowing it, this is the only one that everyone can join in. But no one has the right to join in without the gift. It's such an inclusive club, and Jesus really wants to include you. So will you join Team Jesus? Will you trust Jesus? Will you follow Jesus? He wants to include us all. Now, how's he going to do it? Those final two sentences of our reading. The zeal, the desire of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. This is what God really wants for Christmas. He wants for us all to come and receive this gift by dying to self, having the gift of life, and the everlasting King, Jesus. God's zeal will do it. This is what he really wants. Sometimes when we look at our Christmas lists, I think I have to get them something. The closest God ever gets to saying that is, I have to get them. I have to get them. I have to get them. Even if it means my son becoming human and dying. And my zeal, my desire for them will accomplish this. I'll give them my son so that they can be my child. I have to get them.